Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Hello. Hello, I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am truly honored to share the microphone with the most interesting business leaders. Now, these are people from all across the spectrum, and they have wonderful stories to share, and they are excited to freely share their journeys, their business wisdom, tips, and actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And in fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to and has been mentioned on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. And our topic today is a really important one. We all have a book in us, right? We think we do. We know we do. And somehow we just don't get it out for so many reasons. It's daunting. So our topic is what authors should know and nobody tells them, with my guests Simon Preslin and Beth Lodig. Now, Simon is the president and editor-in-chief of AuthorSource, and Beth is the co-founder and owner of AuthorSource. And they both have a passion for working with authors to bring their works to publication. Beth, Simon, welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm so glad to have you here.
We're just thrilled to be here, too.
Here with you. Beth, you can hear me okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can hear both of you just fine. So before we get started, I want to let people know that AuthorSource, Simon and Beth, are working with me on my new book, which should be out pretty soon, and it's about, guess what, podcasting. So I'm very excited about that. So this is a very timely call. But before we get started, tell us a bit about your company and how you came to start this company, because it's a fairly new venture for you, but you have between you quite a bit of experience in this industry.
Yeah, we, Simon and I, just have a passion, like you said, for working with authors, and we've worked with authors with editing and writing and in the publishing arena for many years. And we just saw a great need for a self-publishing company that people could trust. We've worked with people throughout the process. We know how overwhelming it can be through all the different steps, through writing and editing and production and how to get your book out there, how to get it out to people. And unfortunately, there are some shark-infested waters in the self-publishing space, and we really had a passion and really a calling to make a safe place for people to come where they could easily publish like a pro and know that they're going to be in good hands and someone's going to take care of them and educate and collaborate with them throughout the way. So that's why we started AuthorSource, and we're just thrilled to work with the authors we have and just looking forward to the many authors we can serve in the future as well.
And I love what you said about, you know, the shark-infested waters. Like, I've been looking in to writing a book for a number of years now. And as you know, I'm a techie nerd. I am a nerd in stilettos. I pride myself on thinking, at least, that I can do most everything. When I started looking into self-publishing my own book, I just, instant case of the heebie-jeebies. I was like, oh my gosh, the learning curve is so massive here. And there's so much information out there. And as I did more research, I found that there were competing information streams that looked an awful lot to me like not really good information. So I kept putting it off. You know, I didn't really want to go with a traditional publishing house because, frankly, I can't afford it. And that's not a venue that, I mean, you have to be someone. You have to be pretty good to get those done. I didn't have the time or the energy to write up all the information that they needed. And the more I looked at it, the more I thought, I can't do this. And that, I have to tell you, is not a term that I like to use. I can't do this. But I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
until I came across you guys, and I was like, "Whoo, there's my answer." So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Beth, one of the big things that, and I think I touched on it just a bit there, is traditional publishing versus self-publishing, because self-publishing is fairly new in the history of publishing, right?
Yeah, Beth, I'll jump in there. So, Denise, self-publishing came about around 1999, where it really took off. It was there previous, but just, you know, it was more of a sideline. The problem is, or was back then, the traditional houses throughout the world went through this huge gyration. Many companies started going out of business, and five huge conglomerates now own all traditional houses in the world, except for the smaller independent ones. So you've got these huge conglomerations controlling the self-publishing world, and then they began to lay off individuals, and houses got amalgamated, and so on and on. So the average individual got lost in this entire world. And then somebody decided, hey, I can do what the traditional world does. And that began the spark of the self-publishing world. So there's some huge differences between the two, and I'd like to just elaborate a little bit on that. In the traditional world, the author signs a contract, and the first thing they do is they sign the rights to their book to the traditional house. So they no longer own their book. They don't have, not that they don't have a say, but the final say stays with the traditional house as far as the layout goes, the cover, the content, how it's written. And the author may have some things in mind that they want included in the book, but as I said, the traditional house will decide that. So it's a long, drawn-out process. If a traditional house took you on as an author today, they're looking 3 years down the road, unless the project or the topic is really a hot one, and then they may be able to put it together in about 9 months. But even prior to that, they have set up book agents. And book agents are what they call the gatekeeper of the traditional world. And they determine whether a manuscript is even close to being ready to go to one of the traditional houses, and then they've got to create these book proposals. It's a long, drawn-out process. So not only does the author give up the rights to their book, they have to wait 2 to 3 years to get their book out. And then at the end of things, they have to actually buy their own book. Now, the company may give them a couple hundred free copies. They may give them 6 to 10% on royalties. But if the author wants more books, they have to buy their own book back at a wholesale cost. So the self-publishing world now has shrunk all of that. You can get a book done in as little as 30 days. You, as the author, you control the entire process, so you work with the self-publishing house. A good self-publishing house is going to guide you through the process, going to give you their best advice. You know, you'll go back and forth on things, but ultimately the author has final say on what the content is, what the cover is, how the book is going to look and feel to the public. So it's great for the author because you control the process, you keep your complete 100% copyright, and you also get to decide how your book is going to be marketed. And the big caveat out of this is most people produce a book because they feel they want to make a profit. So whereas in the traditional world, you might get 6 to 10% what's called advance against royalties, in the self-publishing world, you can get up to, in some contracts, so we offer both a royalty and a non-royalty contract, where you actually keep 100% of the royalty. So there's some great advantages from time to the cost factor. Truly, in the self-publishing realm, the author takes on the initial costs, but their payback in the long run is much greater.
Well, that makes sense. Now, when you're self-publishing, there's a lot of moving parts, as I have come to find out. You need a cover. You need it Kindle. You know, you need it ready to go up for Kindle or Ingram, wherever it's going to go. There are a lot of different things. So do you find that when you're taking on a new client like me, I've already got the book cover done, but does your company do all of this, or do you kind of advise them, okay, go over here for the, you know, editing? And editing is something else I wanted to talk about too, but, you know, are you able to piecemeal what the client has done, or do you prefer to do it all? How does that work? Because, you know, people think, okay, I've got to have ISBN number, I've got to have the cover, I've got to have two or three editors, and after a while they do like I did and just walk off like, no, I'll go build a website, that's easy. You know, I can do that in my sleep. Mm-hmm. So what do you advise people to do? Where do they start?
That's a great question, Denise, and the way we work with each author is we take each one custom. Each author situation in each book is unique. And like you said, some authors come to us and they have a concept already in mind for a cover. They may have already worked with a designer but need the editing piece done. They may need some guidance along the way with how to get it to market and distribution. The way we like to handle is we have packages that include everything. So it's a one-stop shop. You can bring us your manuscript and have everything done all the way from the editing to the production to the cover interior. We always provide ISBNs for our authors. And to the marketing and publicity and sales, we have all those pieces for our authors so that it makes it simple and not overwhelming to go through the whole process. Because we really do like to coach people along the way. That's really our hearts. But we do understand that some people come to us in different stages of publishing, and they may have the cover. They may have an idea of how they want things done. We work with people to make sure that each of those pieces fit together in the process and that we can work with each part of it. So in your case, taking your book, for example, you already have a cover design. So what we would do with you is, we'd take that cover design and ask for your designer's source file, whether it's in Photoshop or InDesign, and take that and prep it for Kindle upload. And if it's for a print book, we would make sure that it fits all the specifications for a print book, because there's, you know, all kinds of technical specs, as you could imagine, to get it ready for printing. So we do all that for the author. We don't expect the author to understand every little aspect of the technical side of printing or file preparation, but we do treat each one uniquely. So whatever process someone is, wherever they are, we can help them, and we can come alongside and act as a guide through this process that can be overwhelming.
Yeah, it is overwhelming. I'm sorry, Simon. Go ahead, and then I need to ask about the different types and stages of editing, because that can be very confusing to people.
Sure. So sorry for interrupting you. I just wanted to throw one thing out there. You know, somebody might be listening to this podcast and think, well, you know, books are great, but why is it that I need a book? So we're talking to business individuals, and businesses are set up to resolve, meet, produce products and services that meet the client's need, okay? So a client only comes to a business because they have a particular need. And that's what a book will help an individual, an entrepreneur or a business, set themselves up as an expert. So when you ask yourself, why do I need a book? Because of that. It sets you apart from your competition, and your book will answer those three things. It'll say, this is the need that the client has, this is how I'm going to meet that need, And this is how I can do it through my products and services. So whether that looks like just a straight ebook or a full-fledged physical book or even something like mini e-courses, all of those products go towards setting a business apart from their competition.
Mm-hmm. Now, how does a mini, I have a question. I'm like, what? That's a new one on me. How does a mini e-course turn into, you turn it into a book? Explain that one. My mind just went blank.
Yeah. So it's a new service that Beth and I have come up with. Is something where, let's take you for example. You're the podcast guru. So you create these mini courses where you put in articles and links that show why a podcast is beneficial to your audience. And it sets you up as the expert. And at the end of it, you simply say, to follow up or for more information, please contact me at, and you put in your web address and your email address. So it's something you can send out for free to customers, or you can, use it as like a $9.99 download, something like that. So once again, it's about setting you up as the expert in your field.
Okay, so you're repurposing content and just reaching a different, slightly different audience.
Correct.
Perfect.
So
okay, I thought that might be what it was, but I wasn't sure.
Sure. So you were going to ask about the editing process next.
Editing, right? Yeah. I mean, in my wanderings around in your world, I found that there are different types of editors. I guess there's content editors. There's an editor who will streamline your information, make sure it's readable. There are editors who, will go. Did you even take spelling in school? Have you ever heard of Grammarly? I mean, look, I download a lot of books on my Kindle, a lot of free books. I think I've shared with you I have something like 6,000 free books on my Kindle account. And I'm a bit of a grammar Nazi, I admit it. And if I get to a book that is so poorly formatted or they're using, advice. I mean, they're just using the wrong words in the wrong context. I get the heebie-jeebies. I really do. I mean, I can't read this. I start to get real squirrely with it. And it may have a good plot line. It may be in and of itself a good book, but if I catch error after error, maybe one per page, I'm gone. I will not read that book. And unfortunately, I'm seeing a lot of that. So I guess, and you'll go back and read the reviews, like, well, this could do with a good editor. So what type of editor does somebody like that need, where they have a good book, it's written pretty well, but the errors are so glaring that it's literally unreadable? So what do they do?
Yeah, so once again, good questions. You're really making us think here, so that's really good. In today's world, there's something called conversational English in books, which is the style that most books are written in, and it's, except for fiction books, you're writing them like you're talking to somebody. Well, the problem with that is we often talk in slang, and we don't use proper expressions and words, and so what people are doing, they're translating that same style into the book. And as you very well know, when you see those words in print, you red flags and warning, and all these things go off inside of you, and you think, how in the world can an author put a book like that together? It's because, and that has always been the knock on the self-publishing world, is that people are able to put whatever content they want out there in whatever format they want. So once again, a good company will help you set your book apart from all of those out there. Editing goes through different phases. If you've got a book where you've just got an idea, somebody comes alongside of you called a developmental editor, and they help you formulate your idea. If you have a book written and you know it needs help, and when a company looks at it and they realize it needs a lot of help, that's what's called a substantive edit. So the editor will go in, they'll excuse me, they'll clean up the content, make it flow better, make sure the grammar is correct, smooth things out, make sure that the story, whether it be fiction or nonfiction, reads well and is developed well. Then after that, there's what's called a copy edit. A copy edit focuses more on grammar, spelling, paragraph format, those types of things. Let's call it polishing the book. And then finally, before a book goes out for print, it should always be proofread. So we always encourage authors to have us do a proofread before it goes into what's called layout, and layout is the actual physical book itself. And then one proofread before before we go to print. And that way you catch as many errors as possible. Now, that's a warning that I want to give everybody who's listening to this. There is no such thing as a perfect book. I could pull any New York Times bestseller off a shelf and go through it and find the odd error here and there. Why? Because until we come up with a program that is perfect, an automated program, we're still human beings. So even if you have the best editors and proofreaders in the world, there's a possibility that, you know, an error can slip by. So in your case, Denise, I don't think you're looking at that odd one or two. It's sentence structure and it's formats and flow that simply don't make sense. So that's why we always encourage our authors to go through an editing process and not to scrimp on it. Some people look and say, you know, well, I don't have a couple thousand dollars to spend on this. We always come back and say, what is your book really worth to you? And how do you want to be perceived by the public? Because remember, the book is a representation of you as an individual and of your business. And so you always want to present yourself in the best light to the public so that they know they can have confidence in your products and services and they can trust you.
No, I agree. One thing that I have learned through the process of writing my book is, you know, I am writing it in a conversational tone. I'm writing it very much as I speak. But what I have done, and I have to do this with anything I write because, you know, I type very, very fast. I wear out my keyboards, to be honest with you. I have to replace them at least two times a year. It's pathetic. But what I have learned is that I will take a chapter or a couple of chapters, whatever time I've got, and I will read it out loud. And that's where I catch the boo-boos. Because all of a sudden, and, you know, of course, I'm also looking to create an audiobook as well. So it has to be readable in my own voice. I have to be, you know, what I find that we speak differently than we write. So I have to make sure that what I'm writing, I can read and it makes sense and there's not these, you know, gulping where I'm having to, you know, take breaths or take in air. So I find that's helping. I will find, for some reason, my finger can't find the R key. I will often, when I'm typing you, R, when I'm typing your, it'll turn out as you. I don't know why that is. The R key is invisible to me, apparently, when I'm typing the word your. But that's one of my big mistakes. I make it all the time. And you'd think I'd figure that out by now, but I haven't. Yeah, it's muscle memory at this point.
It's you're not alone, Denise, and we like to tell people all the time. No, you're definitely not. And we often, as writers, we get a little bit too close to our work. And, you know, what we've read words over and over and over again, and, you know, our brain starts to filter out those errors. We simply don't see them. So something we like to say to our authors and to people going through editing is that every writer needs an editor. It doesn't matter how good you are. I'm a grammar Nazi just like you, Denise. I find grammar errors in print and in marketing documents online, and I don't necessarily complain about them or judge them. I just notice it. It's just a natural thing. So, but I still, even though I'm a grammar Nazi, I will still give any work that I'm going to put out there to another editor to look over before I put it out there. Just simply because if you're too close to the work, you may not see those errors. So it's really good to keep in mind that as you're putting your book together, to open it up to some feedback as you're going through the process, maybe chapter by chapter, have people read it, let them know, have them let you know what they think of it, and tell them to be honest. Say, does this read well? Does it make sense? Is it clear? And then certainly have a professional editor take a look at it, because their feedback can be invaluable. There are just simply some conventions with writing and editing that, you know, the general public is not aware of. It's those things that you take for granted that make writing clear and that make it make sense, that, you know, if you read something or you read the first chapter of a fiction novel and feel like, oh, this is a little bit off, a fiction editor can say the pacing is off, you need a hook, the action points are off, the dialogue doesn't work. They have an eye for those things that the general public does not have. So it's great to edit yourself and have feedback from your friends and family, but certainly have a professional editor work with you as well.
Oh,
we
no
all
kidding.
Need them.
And, you know, I agree with you. You know, walking through this process, I'm thinking, wow, it looks so easy when other people do it.
Mm-hmm.
Until you open that epic blank page and then your mind just goes, I call it open refrigerator door syndrome. You just
mm-hmm.
go blank. It's like you've stuck
yes.
your head in the refrigerator door. You don't know how you got there. Pull out a bottle of water when you really wanted celery. I mean, it's just, you know, that's how it works. But here's the thing. I have found through this process, it's really been fascinating to me, I never really paid attention to a table of contents. I really didn't, unless it was, you know, like a business book and I was looking for a particular piece
mm-hmm.
of the book. Oh, I need to go back and read that. I'm finding now when I'm reading, you know, I've got a lot of friends who are authors and speakers, and they send me their books, and I read them and then do an Amazon review. It's a very polite thing to do. And they've gifted me with this book. I want to review their books. I am finding that table of contents better be pretty interesting. What do you think about that? Because they used to be kind of dry. It's like chapter 2, get in the car. Chapter 3, drive the car. Chapter 4, stop the car. We can't do that anymore, can we? I tried. It didn't work. It was very boring.
You're exactly right, Denise. Everything about a book has to be exciting, has to be engaging. You know, your coverage, your 30-second interview with the reader, your back cover text is your minute sales pitch. And then when they flip inside, because they won't flip inside until they read that back cover text, but when they do, oftentimes people at that point will glance through a table of contents. And if the words aren't inviting, exciting, if they're not engaging, if they're not energizing, you know, I call it pedestrian writing, and there's no engagement with the reader, and so it sets up in the reader's mind a psychological or subconscious expectation of what the rest of the book is about. So you bring up a really good point there.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing my homework. Aren't you guys proud of me? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I want to publish a book that genuinely is helpful to people who want to start a podcast. It makes it easy for them. It's readable. It's engaging. It's fun. And most of all, it's not terrifying, because setting up a podcast is kind of like writing a book. It's terrifying. There's a lot of things that go on in the background that you have no clue either how to do them or that they should even be done, kind of like what you guys are talking about. And, you know, I want this book that you'll be publishing with me to really help people and, you know, let them know that, you know, podcasting is fun. You get to meet a lot of people. You get to do things that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily be able to do if you didn't get to meet these people. So there's a lot going on. And as I go through this process with y'all and read other people's books, I'm like, huh, I never noticed that before. So it's really been a learning curve for me, and it's really fascinating. But I wanted to get more, you know, back into the nuts and bolts. And I think, Beth, you and I have talked about this, and I think it's really, really important. Once your book is done, once you've gone through all the processes, whether you do it yourself or, you know, work with a publishing house, whatever it's going to be done, where do you sell your book? What's that step? Because now you've got it. You can't just let it sit on your computer. So what do you do now?
Right. That's a great question, and it's one we get from many authors. They, how do I get my book out there? How do I get it for sale? And there are some options in that space. One of them being Amazon. That's the one that's most well known. You say Amazon to anyone throughout the globe, and they know exactly what you're talking about. It's one of the largest online retailers, started for books, but has much more available, as you know. And one thing that really exploded the self-publishing world was the advent of CreateSpace. That platform allowed anybody to upload their files and their cover and sell books through Amazon. It's a great tool. Many authors use that just to get their foot in the door and get published. What we found is that can be a bit limiting. Amazon is a great marketplace. But what authors should be aware of is that there is a percentage of each sale going to Amazon, and that it's going to cut their royalty down. So again, it's just being knowledgeable about the whole process. So I'm going to talk about a few different things, but the first one, of course, is Amazon and CreateSpace, which most people are aware of. Another option is if you go through a self-publishing company, they will list your book for sale on Amazon or on their website, a bookstore. They may be fulfilling physical books or just doing print on demand through another resource like Amazon CreateSpace. Something that's new in the last 5 years or so, however, is Ingram Spark. Ingram Content Group is one of the largest wholesale distributors of books and CDs, and they're connected with Baker & Taylor, who is a library distributor. They have Lightning Source, which is a printing wing underneath them. They're just huge. Ingram is if you go to a bookstore and you want someone to order your title, it's most likely that they're going to be ordering through Ingram. So what Ingram Spark is, and I think we've talked about this before, Denise, is they're a vehicle through which authors can get their book into bookstores or made available to bookstores. And what's great about Ingram is when you work with them, you upload your files just as if you would with Amazon CreateSpace, but your book has been, the ISBN is registered with Ingram. It's available to bookstores, both online retailers and brick and mortar stores like Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. Gets to use that huge distribution network that's available to Ingram that's global with a print-on-demand model. So what that means for our authors is that if they don't want to have a huge amount of books printed and warehoused and fulfilled in the traditional way, they can have their books available through Ingram and just have them printed on demand one at a time. So there's not that huge outset of paying for printing right at the beginning and then fulfilling in that way. So there's not that big expense. The only caveat with something like Ingram Spark is it is print on demand. So the quality is not quite as perfect as you would get with an offset printer that's doing with, you know, the printing press, the traditional model. That's where you're going to get the highest quality print. But it's pretty good. I think it's about 95% of what you get with an offset printer. And then you get the benefit of that really great distribution model, because the whole point is to get your book out there, right? You want people to be able to purchase your book. And when you work with someone like Ingram, you get to have your book on barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com. And if you walk into a bookstore, say, and you want to do a signing, for instance, a lot of our authors are really interested in doing book signings to try to, well, I mean, I know we'll talk about marketing later, but they can walk into a bookstore and Barnes & Noble and say, this is my one sheet, this is the book I have coming out soon, and this is the ISBN number, it has a wholesale discount available to you, and they can find it on Ingram, and they feel comfortable knowing that they have not only that standard bookstore discount, but they also have your book listed as returnable. So there's no risk for them, and they want to work with you.
And you can't do this if you're strictly on Amazon, right?
Right. That's a good point. If you're with Amazon CreateSpace going through that way, Amazon has something called expanded distribution now, which makes titles available to bookstores. But one thing that you may not know, a lot of people don't know, is that they have a 60% that's put away for Amazon, which you'd think if that 60% would include the 55% discount to bookstores, but it unfortunately does not. So what Amazon does is they have that expanded distribution. They take their 60% cut, but then of that 60%, they take about 35%, and then what's left for the bookstores in expanded distribution is only about 25%. And that's really not enough. Bookstores expect a 55% discount. That's about the standard for the publishing industry. So they may not pick up your book through expanded distribution with Amazon if they only see that 25% discount. So something to keep in mind, that those types of things are, it's something that's expected. And with bookstores, that's a standard in the publishing industry. If they don't see that, that may prevent you from being picked up. So just something to keep in mind, that's a detail that many people may not know about.
Yeah, before you and I started talking, I had no idea about any of that. I just knew Amazon because I might as well own stock in Amazon. Most of us probably do in one way or another. But when you started talking with me about Ingram, that opened up a whole new world for me, which is, and we're going that route, obviously. But one thing I wanted to talk about, and then I'll get to you, Simon, in just a second. I'm sorry, because I don't want to lose my train of thought, which with my little squirrel brain is easy to do. But Audible, you know, I also listen to a lot of Audible business books. I don't listen to fiction on Audible at all. When I read a book, I want to, you know, create my own imagery and feel what I feel like feeling. I don't want somebody else's voice in my head. Business books, however, are very different. So where do you start with an audio version of your book? Is it something that you can record at home? Is there equipment? Should you go into a studio? What do you advise people for that? Because I do want an audio component to my book.
Yeah, I'll take that one. To create an audio book with the proper noise eliminating equipment and things of that nature, Denise, unless you're somebody like yourself who has experience in those, in that realm, it is truly best left to the public, an individual company. And the reason I say that is because audiobooks are growing at about a 40% per year clip. They're the fastest growing segment of the book industry. So it comes down to a quality thing. You can produce a book out of your, you know, you sit in your bedroom, you put your headset on, you buy some software to do some editing, and you think, wow, I've got an audiobook, it's ready to go. But that's not the case. There's formats that you need to follow. You know, regardless of the actual editing, you want a professional voice like your own voice. You've got such a great speaking voice, very warming and inviting. You want somebody like that reading your book. So it's not something that just anybody can do. So you've got voice quality, you've got recording quality, and you've got the formats that you need to know. And only a company with experience in those areas can direct you down that path.
I was afraid of that. It does. And you know, I really do want to read my own book, but honestly, my voice, I doubt seriously would hold up. I can talk for about an hour, and after that, I'm done. I'm not accustomed to speaking a whole lot anyway. I live alone. I'm an introvert. I don't have to talk, so I don't. And, yeah, after a while, my voice is like, I'm just going to go on vacation. You go ahead and just write. You're good. So I don't know how that would work out, but I'm reluctant to hire somebody else because I'm writing about a podcast, right? It has to be my voice, so I've got to find a way to work this out.
Right. I can speak to that, Denise. There are some options for you. You may be connected with someone who does some studio recording. There often are recording studios in your area that do recording for Audible. If you look it up, I've looked this up for another author. Just look in your regional area and look up audio recording, and maybe even audiobook specific, often they have a program set up to work directly with authors because audiobooks are becoming so popular and such a great medium and they're doing really well. It's a great resource for people. So look for a studio in your area that could come alongside you and help you with the professional side of things if you want to do your own narration. And then
I think you could take those files
and and then just bring them to someone like us, and we can use our video editing services and our production services to get it all cleaned up and ready to upload to Audible. So there are some options. It's always best to go with something like that's a personal book and it's you. It would be great to hear your voice because your reader, your listener is going to connect with you. They're going to hear your words with your voice. But if you don't necessarily have a great voice or your message doesn't need to be from your own voice, it's a great, better to go with a professional narrator because it's going to be smooth and the wording is going to be, it's going to sound good. And
your personality.
For lack of a better
right.
word, it's going to come out and there's going to be that great voice there. So again, each author, each book is unique and our job as the publisher is to guide them in the right direction and help them through each step. So, but in your case, I think you could record your own book and you can do it in sessions. That's those audiobook recorders. They'll do, you know, one or two sessions at a time. So you don't tax your voice, and audiobook production is done by the production hour. And usually it's about 10,000 words per production hour. So you can kind of figure how many hours you're going to need to pay for, and that's discussed with your recorder in the production company you work with. So something to keep in mind.
10,000 words. My throat just seized up. It was involuntary. It's like, nope. We're not doing
that. You can break it up.
Nope. I'd have to. But that's a great idea. I never even thought about looking for, you know, somebody local. It just never occurred to me. But I will say, when I'm on Audible, and I have the monthly subscription, and I know a lot of these people that I want to, you know, I want to read their book or hear their book. A lot of them, honestly, I have, you know, I know who they are because they've been on my podcast. I will, if the book is not in their voice, I won't buy it. I just won't buy it because I know how they sound. I know how they interact. I've chatted with most of them multiple times. I want to hear their voice.
Interesting. That's a really unique perspective because many of us maybe haven't heard someone speak in person and they don't have that. They don't understand the difference, but that's a really unique perspective. I can appreciate that.
Yeah, like Larry Wingate, you know, Larry Wingate is a good friend of mine. He's been on here several times, the Pit Bull of Personal Development. I buy his books because they're his voice. Now, I've read the books. He sent me the books, but I want to hear book. I'll give you a good example. Brendan Bouchard, you know, he's a very, very well-known marketer with a terrific story. I mean, just a terrific story. And I have his book. I do have the book called The Charge. And I tried to read it, and for some reason, I could not get into that book. And I kept trying because he really is a fascinating guy. And one day I went, hang on a second, I think I have that book on Audible. And he read it. You know, it was narrated in his voice, so I bought it. And I have to say, the first maybe chapter, he was miserable. You could tell. You know, he was trying to read the book. He was stilted. He I was like, oh, boy. You know, I may not make it through this book. And all of a sudden, y'all, he hit his stride, and he became him. And he got into it. And the book was fabulous. But that first, you know, 10, 20 minutes, like, oh. But once, and you could hear it. You could hear it when he clicked on. And I think that, I still love that book because you can tell. And I've watched so many of his videos, I know how he speaks. I could tell when he became Brendan Bouchard. He wasn't just reading.
Wow, interesting.
It's amazing, Denise, how people get intimidated. Even Brendan Bouchard, who's stood in front of hundreds of thousands of people, and he knows his message inside out and backwards, but yet when you go into a different format, it's the unknown, it's the intimidation point. And that's something that a lot of people who are considering doing an ebook really have to think about. Do they have the wherewithal? Do they have the confidence in themselves, in their message, that they can speak with clarity? And if not, that's why there are many of these audiobook companies who have professional speakers, so that the message is clear. And people who aren't necessarily familiar with the author themselves, the message that they want to get across comes across.
Exactly. And, you know, just thinking about that now, and I'm going to go back and listen to it again while I'm baking my ham today. I've got company coming tomorrow. But my attitude is, well, if Brendan can do it, I can do it too. I mean, he was nervous and he didn't go back. God bless him for doing this. He didn't go back and redo that. He just let it go. And I think that was brilliant because it showed that, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be so polished that it's now soulless. And I do find a lot of audiobooks are just without soul. So I'm really glad that he left that alone. And I don't know if he meant to, that as a lesson for those of us who know his voice, but it was for me. And I'm very appreciative of that. Okay, so we've only got 14 minutes. Royalty structures for people, and we touched on it a bit, but the royalty structures, and this is my big question, are they different between Ingram and Amazon? Are they different on Audible? I mean, I'm sure they are. And free books, what is the deal with free books on Amazon? How do people get paid for those? Because I download a ton of them. And I always have this little niggling question, like, am I reading your stuff for free? Are you getting paid for your work? Because I'm a professional. I like to get paid for my work. We all do. So that's a big question for me.
So I'll address that one first. So free books, it's one of those things. Why are these books free? How are they making any money? And the answer is this. When you offer a book for free, especially within the first month of it launching or coming out, even though it's free, all those downloads are counting toward your overall sales, overall downloads. So it's right away boosting your credibility and boosting your launch and showing you as a top seller. So if you're someone who's looking to get at the top of one of those Kindle categories, great way to do it is to make it free and to blast everyone on your email list. My book's coming out. It's available this date. Free until this date, and just really go for a strong launch. So a lot of those books are free for that reason, just to create some excitement and build for as a marketing technique, just to get a bestseller, get to the top of one of those categories. And even a 99-cent price could do that, but free certainly is great. And even though it's free, again, it still counts toward an overall download count. So it'll help with the Amazon algorithm. Also,
I had read somewhere.
Books.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. I had read somewhere that if the book is not read all the way to the end, it doesn't count. Is that true?
Oh, interesting. That's something I'd have to look up. I don't know that.
Yeah, I've read that several times. You know, I work with a lot of author speakers, and yeah, some of my colleagues, if you will, also work with authors and speakers, and we're all always in the middle of a book launch of some description, or we're working together to help, you know, put out a book launch. And I have seen this more and more. Next time I see it, I'll take a screenshot and send it to you, Beth. But, you know, people are saying, okay, you know, here's my book. It's free for – they'll put it up on a lead page, or they'll put it up on Optimized Press, you know, something to capture. Here's your call to action. And they'll say, and I've seen it time and time again just recently, by the way, the book is free for 5 days. Be sure to read all the way to the end. Or it doesn't count for us. I've seen, and I'm like, So
I wonder,
you know,
if that's something that's just changed recently. They always
I don't know.
Changing. As you know, everything's always changing. So that may be something that's new.
Yeah.
It used to be that it just had to be a verified purchase and that was also, yeah, something to look into for future. So I saw somebody say,
well, if you even just get halfway, skip to the end, that way I get credit for it. And I'm thinking, that's kind of tacky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as a marketer, that's tacky. I mean, I understand call to action. What I don't understand is, teaching people how to cheat the system on your behalf. I don't like that, but I have seen it.
I don't know if I care for that either, but very interesting, something to look into for sure.
When you find out, and if I see it, I will definitely send it to you.
Great. Another reason you might see books for free is if there's a perma-free book where it's the first one in a series and an author has a whole series of books. The first one is often listed for free, so that will then lead to purchases of the other books in a series. So those are the two ones that I'm aware of. There might be some other reasons why you might have something for free, but those are the two main ones that I know of. As far as royalty structures, you're going to find some variety across the board. I did touch on Amazon, where they have a 60% royalty that they take for each purchase of either your print book or your ebook. And I broke that down a little bit with what they would give to bookstores and expanded distribution. Ingram just simply offers the bookstore discounting. They don't take a cut of each purchase. I imagine that they make a bit on the printing of the book when they show you what the print cost per book is for each print-on-demand book sold. So I'm sure they're making some money on that end, but they don't technically take a royalty for books purchased. As far as self-publishing companies go, you'll find a whole gamut of royalties that are available. Some offer, 40% royalty to the author, and they'll take a 60% royalty. Some offer 70-30. Simon and I were aware of with a previous publishing company is that they would take 30% of the gross profit of a book and then give the author 70% of the net. So that was a little bit sneaky. They, taking from the gross and then giving a portion of the net to the author. What we do at AuthorSource is we take 30% of the net. So after Amazon's taken their fees, after any other printing cost, we only take our royalty if we're working with a royalty contract from the net, so that it's much more fair to the author and it's much more equitable. We also offer non-royalty contracts for folks that really aren't looking to do a huge marketing campaign. They're not looking to get into bookstores. They simply want to get their book out there. We'll offer a non-royalty contract just to make that a little bit more profitable for them. And and that's something that's unique in the industry. I don't know of any other company that offers a non-royalty contract. So just something to keep in mind. And in that case, we would set them up with their own accounts, and they would have access to their royalty structure and sales and all that. So
I'm thinking that might be the better bet for authors that are speakers who are selling books at the back of the room. Would that be their best choice?
That's actually a good point. With a speaker, when you're printing, when you sell books as a speaker, you're making 100% royalty on those because you're printing those. Mm-hmm. Let me back up a bit. When we have people, we have an author right now. He's a business leader. His book is on schemes and scams. He did a combination of a large print run, which he's sold through speaking engagements, and listing on Ingram. So what his listing on Ingram allows him to do is to get into bookstores to have that global distribution. And what the print run did for him is it allowed him to have a very cost-effective print run, because you're looking at rather than $4 to $5 per book print on demand, you're looking at $2 to $3 per book printing in a quantity of 750 to 1,000. So he's getting that better cost-effectiveness. And also he has books on hand to sell at a speaking event. And in that case, less the cost of printing, he's able to make 100% royalty on those books. So that's a great question. We wouldn't take a royalty on the books that he sold because we're not selling those ones. Those are his books. He gets to make the 100% royalty. He can price them how he wishes to price them and go from there. So great question. Thank you.
I work with a couple of speakers who do exactly that. So I cheated a little bit. I already knew how it worked. Okay, so Simon, I think you and I have discussed this, and this is an important component. We want to get it in before the hour ends, but how do you write your book? And I know you've talked about left brain versus right brain. I tend to move in and out of both of mine, so there's an open door there. So I think you have shared with me a simple method to write a nonfiction book before. Do you have time to share that with us now?
Sure. You're just unique, Denise. Being able to move.
I just figured there's a big hole in my brain, and I just go back and forth like I have good sense. It's just the way it works.
Yeah. So when you can marry the two hemispheres of your brain, you are a unique person. And what I mean by that is left brain people tend to be more logical and right brain people are more creative. So when somebody sits down to write a book, they have to do what I call satiate that major component of their brain, whichever side that they tend to lean to. So if somebody is a creative individual, we just tell them to simply write your book. Don't worry about structure. Don't worry about format. Don't worry if this idea matches with that. You've got to get all your creativity out there, because if you don't, when you go back to do your revisions, your creativity side is always going to be popping in and say, oh, add this and change this and here's another great idea. You'll never get your book done. So how you know when that creative side feels fulfilled is the ideas will lessen now, and you'll just get this feeling of satisfaction inside. So then you would flip over to do what the left brain logical people will do up front, and that is create an outline. So the simple method we use is called storyboarding. And what we ask people to do is get some 3x5 cards, or you can do this on the computer, and you start off with some kind of a working title. So let's use your book. It's Podcasting is for Everybody. And then the next 3 or 4 lines, you're going to summarize what your book is about. And then the last line on that card, we like to get people to summarize their book in one statement. Because if you can't do all of that, you can never sell your book. You can never put a sales pitch together because you don't understand your topic because it's too big. So what that does for the person who's more logical is it gives them a starting place. And then after that, we ask them to take some other 3x5 cards, and you put chapter 2, chapter 3. On each chapter, you put a subtitle, and then you put no more than 3 bullet points on each card. So if you were doing podcasting, chapter 1 might be equipment needed, and then you'd list your equipment. And number 2 would be setting up your studio, and you list out how to set up your studio. So you do that until you get all your ideas out on these cards. And then for that logical person, they now have a grid in which their creative side can say, oh, now I can add in this point and I can write about this point. So the logical side is now satiated. So back to the creative person, they've got this book out there. It's all written. They now take all that writing and they plug it into their grid and they figure out what works and what doesn't. So in both cases, once you've got this grid created, you look at your cards and you say, well, this idea fits better over in chapter 6 and this one fits better in chapter 8, but this one that I've got written in chapter 10, when I look back to the very first card I wrote, which tells me the summary of my book, it doesn't fit at all. So it goes for another book. So what that allows you to do is streamline your book, get it down into a very manageable number of words, and then you've got the grid set up for the creative person to bring their creativity into, and you've got a grid set up for the logical person in which to expand on their creativity. When we explain that to people, they think, wow, that makes sense. And what that does for you, Denise, it gets rid of probably 90% of writer's block, because writer's block is simply a conflict between those two brain hemispheres trying to dominate.
And see, that makes sense. And I think I mentioned this to you before, but Craig Ballantyne, who has also been a guest on this podcast, and he is very, very well known. He's an amazing man. He offered to be my accountability buddy. And I check in with him every Tuesday, and he says, oh, yay, or, you know, how about this? And he, you know, one time he excoriated me, and he had every right to because, you know, I'm supposed to do what I said I was going to do, and this one week really was the week from hell, but that is no excuse. And I, you know, checked in at my usual time, because every week is the week from hell, right? So, yeah, and I sent him, you know, kind of a mea culpa. I did not get this done, and look, this is embarrassing to say, but I have to own up to it. I got an immediate email back from him says, this is not acceptable.
Ooh.
My head could not have hung any lower. But you know what? I never let him down again. Because I let him down. I let me down. It was sickening. It was a sickening feeling. So, but one of the things that he did say to me, because I was just stuck, it's like I'm trying to get all this down. And by the way, you're talking about those little cards. I'm going to deviate a little bit. I use Trello. It's an online app. It takes the place of those little cards. It keeps it all in one spot. It's your brain on steroids. So if anybody wants a digital version of you know, 3x5 cards, try Trello. But what he did was he sent me back a note when I was really struggling with, you know, forming some of these chapters. He said, Denise, don't try to write it. Speak it. So I... you know, yes. Turn on the little app on my phone, and I just chat to myself. I may be here because I have to listen to them. I may hear myself making a pot of gumbo, but I'm speaking in my own voice, my own tone, and it works. So try that.
Yeah, and that's your creativity side coming out. You know, you've got this great idea. You're doing this gumbo, and this idea pops into your mind. And Denise, you bring up a super point, is that there is no one way to write a book. And, you know, there's classes on them, and people say, oh, you've got to do this and you've got to do that. You don't have to do anything. What you have to do is what is right for you. And so you bring up an excellent point there.
Well, thank you for that, because, I mean, I was trying to say, okay, you know, these guys have done it. They've been there. I'm going to follow the path that they've laid down. Unfortunately for me, I don't take directions well. I fight with my nav system. She says, turn left in half a mile, and I don't because she's not the boss of me. So that process does not work for me, as you can well imagine. But when he just kind of said, well, try this, you know, speak it to yourself, because honestly, we have our best ideas in the shower. We can't write them down. It was like, oh, my God, that was brilliant. Oh, crud, oh, crud, oh, crud. So you know how I solved that problem? I got some bath crayons. And I take them into the shower with me, and I scribble all over my wall. I come back, I take a picture of it with my phone, and then I clean the wall. So there's always a way to...
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
I said, out of the box thinking. Well done.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You have to. Listen, we are out of time. And honestly, guys, I would love for you to come back because we still have more to share. Book marketing strategies. You know, just different things that we did not get to in this particular episode. So will you come back maybe in a couple of months?
Of course. We'd love to.
Absolutely. We'd love to.
Thank you. Well, hopefully after my book has been published, and we can talk about that. So, listen, Simon Beth, where can people find you on the web?
You can find us at www.authorsourcemedia.com.
Excellent. Thank you both so much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today, and I thank you for all the wonderful tips and the advice that you shared with our audience. And before we end this episode of Your Partner in Success Radio, I would like to invite our audience to listen to us in iTunes and take us along on your success journey. Thank you.
Thanks, Denise.
Yep. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.